rating. And for me, it just happened to be in the television and entertainment business. And the spark of success and to be accepted was so intoxicating that I became wildly addicted to the feeling of being accepted, to feeling successful, to doing things well, to being at the top of the game. And so the entertainment industry was the byproduct of that. I just wanted to be great at something. And I found that people liked me more here. And so I wanted to make more friends because I was, you know, people liked me here. So I wanted more people. If I meet more people like me. And so I pushed that. And so it's like, I created incredible relationships in a game in Hollywood where those are really valuable. Not like it's a purpose that that was what I was trying to do, but I realized that that served my goal. And it's the same thing with creating and selling and pitching and developing shows. It's like, I just wanted to be successful at it and taste that and feel like I had done that. And America gave me that. So the irony and the double-edged sword of that is that once I achieved a certain level of success, it's like a diminishing returns, right? Like once you have one television show on the air, that's the great success for any producer. So yes, I got to celebrate that like crazy. But like the second show isn't quite as good. And the 47th show is no celebration at all because I had predicted doing 8 shows that year on my spreadsheets and the ballot, you know what I mean? Like my projections at 8, I only did 7. So when that taste started to go away, I was like, what am I doing? Just chasing paychecks here? And so that really forced me to like, I think I want to go find other things to be successful at.
What's been your greatest success business-wise?
Business-wise, like obviously selling, you know, big shows is the big piece and having hit shows. I'd probably say Bar Rescue is the most successful show that I had the biggest hand in. You know, it wasn't all me making the show. I didn't even make the show. I, you know, created and sold the show. The Biggest Loser, I didn't really have anything to do with on a general, you know, it was already sold by the time I got to the company. And so that was probably the biggest success from that side. I think on a personal level, my biggest success is leaving the business completely and not having it as a backup plan and doing the book and getting the book to where it is and having the book be a bestseller and all that kind of stuff is great. But having the internal balls to actually go through with the leaving the industry was very, very difficult. And like, it was a proud moment for me because it's like, it wasn't a backup anymore. And I always thought TV would be a backup plan when I was doing the book. And then when I finally made that turn, it's kind of like, okay, that's pretty cool. There's been a couple of companies that I had a really like heavy hand in saving and helping and raising money for that have done really well. There's a company called X-Cures, which finds alternative cancer treatments for advanced cancer patients, and it uses AI. And it is, I mean, in the literal sense, has saved lives. And I have introduced people to that platform. I help them raise money. They probably wouldn't, well, maybe they would have, but it like, you know, the path to where they are today without me involved, you know, far less likely. And that's pretty cool. For a guy who created television shows for a living to like have people be like, I'm alive today because you did an interview with this doctor who recommended I try this platform is not something I ever expected.
I will turn it over to my well-read friend, Jess, to follow up. Since you wrote a book, he can proceed with the book and the medical I'll come back to.
I do think your publisher should probably start sending me checks because I do refer usually more than one person a week to the book. I only have 2 books on my desk. People know I'm a total book nerd but I only have 2 on my desk. I have The Obstacles Away by Ryan Holiday, which I use instead of Prozac, like for all my entrepreneurial anxiety. It's like, oh no, it's okay. I got to outthink the situation. And The 3-Minute Rule. I can't tell you, like, it's hard for me to listen to anybody pitch me something without interrupting and going like, hey, listen, can I just pause you? We just get this book. Like, let's just start here. I'm going to help you. Just get this book, but then like actually stick to 3 minutes and you'll get like the people are going to ask you questions for another 45 minutes if you do those 3 minutes right. So like, let's just start over. Just get this book right now and then let's talk again. You know?
I love that.
So it happened. Yet, you know, I got to meet one of Greg's good friends yesterday. Whit, same thing. We're talking about your book. And I just want to know. So I've read, you know, many, many books on sales, so many on marketing. And yet yours has a resonance that almost no books in the space have. What do you think is so special about it?
I think it's what I think has helped is it's looked at it as a practical guide. Like, it is a little bit of a step-by-step guide. If you are pitching or presenting something, here's a way you can actually put it in a format that works. And I think I find that on stage and with the book is that people like gravitate to the idea of like, I'd actually like to do something with it. Like, lots of books are great at making you feel good and you feel like inspired while you're reading them. And then you're like, it was a great book and there's nothing to do. Whereas like, I think people, you know, I meet a lot of people that show me pictures of the 3-minute rule with ear tags and post-it notes attached to it and highlights. Cause it's like, you kind of go through it and be like, okay, I can use this right this second, right now. And so like when I'm doing a seminar and all these kind of things, I will have people go through it and do the exercises in real time with their information. And I think that helps the process. Also, the idea that it's like, I am relatively good at simplifying and clarifying information. So it's like one of my skills. So when you read it, it's like, it's pretty clear the way I'm describing what to do and how to do it and the benefits. So it kind of seeps in quickly. So I think that that's been a big help for people. The only thing I would say is like, I do still get every once in a while, I get people with the email that it's like, this book has changed my life. I redid my entire pitch. Will you take a look at it? And I'll look at it and I'll go, wait, what book did you read? Because that wasn't mine. Like, the truth is like, and I make the joke on stage, it's taken me 20 years to learn how to say things in 3 minutes. It's not easy. And so I think that people don't even realize the level of frustration that they're dealing with in their business, in their pitching, in their presenting, until they read the book and they're like, oh my God, this is what I've been feeling and this is the problem, right? And I tell the story all the time. Like, I wrote the intro to the book, which was just 3 minutes long. Obviously, 3-minute rule, here's the intro, it's 3 minutes. What a great idea, right? 3 minutes on an intro is about like, you know, 4 or 5 pages. That's what 3 minutes is. My first attempt at writing the intro, 14 pages. And it's like, because the publisher told me to write the thing after I already wrote the book, because then I'd know what to put in the intro. Well, the problem is now I know everything so well in the book and I'm in love with it that it's like, well, I got to keep all this. There was a time when I literally was negotiating with myself saying, well, this information in the intro is so important and so crucial that maybe this is the one time it breaks my own 3-minute rule. Right? So, and there are actually copies. They call them proof copies, where they're not like, you're just basically getting feedback. There's proof copies with a page and a half extra in them. And I had to call the publisher and be like, holy crap, like this is, because I had pushed stuff from another, like I had cut stuff and I'd pushed it into the first chapter instead of cutting it because I loved it so much. So precious, my little information. And I had actually pushed it into the first chapter. And one of my friends was like, yeah, I wish the first chapter started a little faster. And I was like, what? And then I read it, I'm like, oh my God. I'm a victim to my own thing. So I think it really does deal with the frustration that a lot of people are dealing with right now.
First, how many TV shows do you think you sold to Hollywood over your career?
Probably like 300.
Okay.
Maybe more.
I want to talk about two things. First is, as you told me many times, like if you do the first 3 minutes right, you're going to get the other questions like, don't feel so precious. If it needs to come out, it will. Do you think about like having other information ready or having like a leave behind or anything of like, I'm going to do the 3 minutes well, but I am going to be prepared for discussion, even though that's not going in the 3 minutes? Or how do you think about that?
Yeah, almost always. Because at the end of the day, like your 3 minutes basically gives people the ammunition for them to explain it to other people. What happens is they want to do the quote unquote due diligence, but you want them to be doing that from a place of excitement or a place of knowledge or a place of a foundation of understanding, I call it. So if we're going to have a conversation for 45 minutes, it'd be nice if I wasn't trying to convince you of something for 40 of those minutes, right? It'd be like, here's what I do. Here's how I do it. This is why I think it works for you. And here's how we get together. And then the person will be like, well, how do you do that? Oh, that's interesting. And they lead that conversation. Now, there is an entire sort of swath of the world that doesn't get that chance. You're presenting for 20 minutes, you're not getting interesting feedback, right? So I call it it's basically the 3 and 10 rule is what I use of them. It's like you build three minutes, and then basically for the next 10 minutes, you're answering the proverbial questions that you know they're going to ask, most likely, and you're leading them through those questions. So I have a 3-minute rule for lawyers right now that I'm partnered with, and it's going really well. And so basically these defense lawyers who, you know, are, it's an interesting world. You know, they get pounded on by the greatest, you know, personal injury lawyers or plaintiff lawyers that are contingent based. So they have millions of dollars at stake. And you as a defense lawyer, you have one chance to explain your case. And if you get it wrong, it's costing your client millions of dollars and most likely your job, right? So, and it's not like what you and I do, Jess or Greg. Like, we don't get to pitch it. You know, I could pitch my TV show to 9 different networks, right? And I can call back and pitch it again. And like, you can't do that to a jury, right? You get one shot. So opening closing statements, they use the 3 and 10 method a lot, like a lot, which is here's the 3 minutes of here's what the case is. Here's why it's relevant. Here's what we're going to show you next. And now they literally say in these opening statements, like, I'm sure you're going to have questions about this. Let me explain a couple of things I'm sure you're probably thinking. And then you'll go through point by point. But every point you bring up, now your audience has the frame of reference. They understand what it is. You know, like, they get it. And so it's been really effective there. So preparing for answering the questions and diving deep is an exciting exercise because you want to do that. So
I love it. Greg, what kind of questions is this bringing up?
2 questions. One, lots of people aspire to get into the entertainment industry. You've had 300 shows. Remarkable. You know, how do you create a successful show? And the second part of the question is, what is the thing what have you been surprised that CEOs don't know how to do well? That you would have thought that they would have grasped and they haven't? You can answer in either order.
I'll do them in order. So first of all, how do you, today, if you were going to, you know, you wanted to create a TV show, I would say the best way to do that is to never think about doing that again, is to take that idea right out of your head and throw it away. There is no easy way to do that. There is no path to success on that world anymore. It doesn't exist. And if you're not in the business of television and you're not getting into it, 300 shows, not one of them came from people outside the business calling me up being like, hey, I got a show idea. It just doesn't happen. The business is very sort of like mature, advanced, difficult, competitive, and the idea is worth almost nothing. It's just, and it's not as lucrative as people think it is. Like, yes, it worked out for me, but I started 20 some odd years ago at the birth of reality television when everybody was getting in. It's like saying you were a great venture capitalist in Silicon Valley in the 80s. It's like, okay, like as all this stuff started to come alive, like, how do you, it's not the same thing anymore, right? Like the heyday of that is long over. And I see so many people in my inbox that have good jobs and careers and they have an idea for a TV show and they spent money on some sort of piece of tape or something because someone told them they could get it to producers. And it's just like, the best advice I can give you is to never think of this again. It is eating up time and energy that you will never get back. And even if you do, it won't be anything like what you want. If you're 21 years old and you desire to be in the entertainment industry, okay, you got time to go work in the mailroom and work your way up. It's just,
it's all about relationships.
Not an easy thing. So I would say, yeah. And it's just like, Greg, how do I get a new drug trial started? Like, I got an idea. Like, can I just go? You're just like, what? And it's like, it's kind of the same thing. Like, when there's millions and millions of dollars in entertainment, just like drug development. Guess what? When there's millions and millions of dollars in play, it means it's wildly difficult to get
it.
And only a few people get that money. Like, that's just the way it is, right? Number 2, what if I find that CEOs don't do well that I would think that they do well? It is by far, without question, the simple summarization of my company does blank, you know, is so difficult for CEOs to just be clean and clear with their messaging. They spend so much time operating and building, and it's like, it's this attitude that we used to have when we were pitching TV shows, when we couldn't quite get all the details done. It would be like, it's in the casting. It's all going to be in the casting. Don't worry about that, right? Like, it's like shiny object. And a lot of companies can't simplify what they do. They don't pitch, they don't present, they don't clarify in really clean elements what their company does, because they believe that because they have different divisions and all kinds of elements, that it makes their company complex and different than it's just, you know, it's not a generator manufacturer. It's all these other things. It's like, no, people need to just get it classified right away. I'm sorry that that's the way human beings classify information, but that's just what we need. And so I noticed that when I went to Bahrain and Saudi Arabia and did a bunch of stuff with Saudi Aramco and training. And one of their big companies, they had 13 of their division heads there. And the idea was I was going to, you know, do this seminar for 3 days with all their different division heads for their individual businesses and all this kind of stuff. And the CEO, after the first thing, she's like, wait, I don't think we know how to do this as a company in general, like our overarching company. And can we like carve out a half day and do that? And I was like, yeah. So it took us the entire morning of 13 of the smartest people to be like, Lamar Holdings is a blank that does blank, right? And the exercise of being like, Juvenescence is a blank that does blank is surprisingly difficult. And many times it's hours. The good side of it, that is, that exercise is you find out that the people in your company don't use the same terminology you do on one sentence, right? And I would say anybody listening and you guys yourselves, try that. Send that to the people that run your company and say, Juvenescence is a blank company that does blank, and see what comes back. And you'll be like, what the hell? Like, you know, and these guys argued, well, are we a platform? Are we a private public placement? Are we in a fund? Like, you know, and that's interesting exercise. And so what you find is you start to get people, then they get aligned and everything else starts to fall into that piece. So,
Jess, you've read so many biographies. Does that come through, or is there somewhere you'd like to go with this with respect to CEOs or people in general, an entrepreneur starting a business?
Yeah, I think so often, Brent, especially as you talk about like the team getting bigger, this idea of like, people like generally have a feeling of what we do around here, but they don't necessarily have the exact same North Star of what sport are we playing. And they certainly haven't practiced the ability to explain that simply and quickly. You know, like two guys that I've heard that have done a lot with this in their companies. One guy says, like, figure this out. And then have like a big wad of $5 bills, like a mafia mobster wad of $5 bills, and just hand them out and like just quiz people everywhere. And anybody who can answer your question, hand out the $5 bill and like keep this huge wad on you and just repeatedly do this for anybody who can answer. And then last week, there's a guy who he is the CEO, sold Kinko's to FedEx for $2.5 billion on the show. He did it with $100 bills. And he's like, now, you can't hand out as many that way, right? But he's like, you want to have people who are prepared to answer the question? Have it start getting around the company that the CEO is handing out $100 bills for people who can answer right.
That's genius.
And so I guess when I hear other smart people repeating what Brant says, it reinforces it for me.
And look, Greg, the other big piece of the puzzle, which I've discovered over the sort of the last few years of this, is that a lot of CEOs and companies will bring me in to consult and to help with their sort of strategic element, and it will turn into a personal exercise, which is I found very strange in the beginning, and now I understand it is as CEOs who run, you know, highly intense, successful businesses, they have very good skill sets in certain areas, but they look at other, you know, I obviously have a very weird, eclectic life, and I do a lot of traveling and adventuring, and that's sort of my passion. And so I have a lot of very, very, very wealthy friends who basically just like beg me to help them find fun in their life. And that I found very strange. But now I've sort of developed an entire series about it, and I get it, because it's like when you're hyper successful as an entrepreneur or a business owner, like you are channeling your skills and your intensity into one area in that business, and it gives you the feedback of success. And it's surprising how many people at that level don't channel that ability to achieve into their personal lives for themselves. It's like if they were as passionate and driven to have an incredible year of travel, adventure, and fun and whatever, they'd be the greatest at it ever, right? Like I'm as good as a retired fun guy as I ever was a TV producer. Like I crush it on my adventures, right? With my team and stuff. So I think that's a lot of training and stuff that I've been finding people are just like flocking to, which is like, I'm super skilled, I'm super awesome. Can I hone that ability into more fun, excitement, lifestyle stuff? And being successful in that world then gives those CEOs the same feelings, because what happens a lot of them, and athletes are the same. I've trained a lot of athletes in that, in this space, and I did work with the Clippers directly on it. And the idea is that like they are so intense, and victory and pluses and minuses and wins and losses in their personal life on the court give them such intensity, but then when they go into their normal everyday life, there's none of that. So it's like, how do you blame them for wanting to be at the office or be on the floor? Or like when you look to CEO, it's like, well, where else in their life are they going to get this type of interaction? The pluses, the minuses, the wins, the success, the risk, the, you know, like it just doesn't exist for most people outside of the office. And you can't blame them for like, this is where I feel alive. And so what I work with a lot of people is like, I can show you how to do that outside of the office. Don't give up any of those feelings. Just be that intense and awesome about other things as well. And so that's been super rewarding for me as well in that piece.
Well, I can testify you actually live what you talk about, because of all the different guests I've invited to like, hey, come up to Park City. Let's go backcountry snowmobiling. Let's go dirt biking. Let's go do something awesome. And there are people are like, oh, that sounds awesome. Yeah, let's do that, Jess. You're like one of the only people who came out and, you know, unfortunately, we broke your collarbone at 10,000 feet elevation on a dirt bike. But now we can laugh about it. Tell us about this crazy trip you've got coming up.
So, you know, it happened to me just after COVID. I ended up taking the family on a 6-month tour around the country. I went to all 48 states in a giant RV, worked from the road, just experienced America like I'd never expected. It was the greatest thing that happened to my family. Kids changed their lives. It was just incredible, right? And so I just realized like that is part of my core existence. I want to go do exciting, fun things. So my youngest son is graduating high school. He's willing to take a year off. My daughter's going to take a gap year in her college. And we're going to go travel around the world for a year. So we're going to do 52 countries in 52 weeks. And in every single country, we're going to go meet the most interesting, you know, cool people and do really fun things and experience culture and experience the world and try to sort of mimic a little bit what I did on the America tour and just sort of like learn about the way people are and the way cultures are and expose my family, my kids to this. And I'm really excited. It's like, I'm not in a place in life where I need to be anywhere specific. You know, I work with clients that I love working with, not because I have to show up in an office every day. So I have that kind of freedom. And when we started talking about this, the number one piece, two things happened. One, every single person that I talked to was like, wow, that's crazy. How could you? It seems so daunting. And they were just sort of overwhelmed. And the one piece that helped me make the decision to do it and eventually buy plane tickets and all that kind of stuff is I just kept saying, like, why wouldn't I do this? What is the reasons not to do it? Like, there just aren't any, you know? And it's like every reason you talk about not doing something is just so, such bullshit. It's just terrible. And I just wasn't going to do that. And even my wife, who is almost on board, you know, it's like she doesn't process information like I do. So she's just overwhelmed at the thought. And I'm like, I'm overwhelmed at the thought of it as well. I just don't dwell on that. I'm just like, this is what we're doing. And we're traveling every Wednesday to a different country. And if it doesn't work out or we don't like it, on one of those Wednesdays, we'll just fly back to Los Angeles and it'll be over. So that's sort of the exciting sort of version of this. And so, yeah, July 1st, we leave.
I like your Canadian Independence Day choice there. Yeah. So, Greg, you live a life of intentionality and spend time in different countries. What does this make you think about, and how do you think about it for your life as well?
It's such an interesting point, you know, because to be successful, you know, whether it's, you know, an LA Clipper or a CEO of a major corporation, you're the guy, the gentleman you interviewed from Kinko's, you've got to be like this. You know, you put the blinders on, you're working hard, you're dedicated. And we don't step back enough to get that work-life balance properly. Also, when you're at a senior level, which, you know, Brant was describing, you don't have confidants. You know, when you have a question, there's, you know, who can you say, by the way, I'm really not sure what the company should do right now. Because you can't, you do that within anyone who works in the corporation, who understands the corporation, it permeates the whole system. So you have to hold it back. So that is a tricky thing. And that's where the people like what Brant's doing is so very important. As far as travel, you know, it's extraordinary. And every country that Brant and his son and daughter go to, they're going to learn something new about that they may want to incorporate into their life or not. You know, they may say, wow, you know, we're in Scotland and the kilt thing really works. I'm going to start wearing that when I go back home, you know, and in the different countries. So it's an extraordinary adventure. And to know that you can drop into any country in the world and survive will empower his children like nothing else. So, yeah, I mean, Brant's a hero. I mean, just what the things that he embarks on. And I know, Jess, you have the same sort of formula as well in your own life, all the amazing adventures you've been on. It's the key to life, right? Friends and experiences.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, Greg, even you, like, you know, I don't know how many times, like, I've invited you to probably 50 different things, right? And it was like, yeah, when I get out of the day-to-day of Juvenescence and the team's in place, I'll have more time to do that, right? And so as you go through that process, you know, it's interesting to think about, like, if you were going on a week ski trip somewhere and you put the same effort and energy into the week of planning and going on that ski trip to make it the most successful ski trip week that anybody's ever had. And in fact, if there was an award ceremony after that week for the best ski trip, what would you be doing to get on the podium, right? As a guy who is one of the more successful, driven, focused people, you would be able to absolutely crush that. Like, and so it's an interesting exercise to start focusing some of the incredible talents you have for success into rewards for your own life on a personal level, because it's all been on the big scoreboard, right? And so I think that it's difficult to do, because winning in business and stuff is intoxicating. It's just, and it fills your days with amazing, fun, energetic feelings, right? And that's, I think, what a lot of people don't understand when you see your dad or your husband or your wife that's working so hard in the office, and you're like, yeah, well, this is the greatest thing that's going on. Like, yeah, I'm stressed or it's like, but this, I feel alive. And so transferring that into other areas of life is not an easy task, but it's super, super rewarding. And I've just found that it's been an eye opener for a lot of people. And what Greg said about not having confidants is shocking, because I do these executive experience series. Jess came and spoke at one when we were in Park City. And so what's interesting is I used to do, I'd have the eight executives from all different industries. We go together, we spend a weekend, we do fun adventures. And I usually lead it as a mastermind and whatnot. And so one of the first ones, I had this questionnaire where I basically like, hey guys, here's the questions. We're just going to go around the room and just sort of answer these things. And it was like, what do you hope for this year? What's your biggest fear about your company, where it's going? Just like general good conversational pieces, right? And I was like, hey, it's about a 3-minute exercise. Ha ha, 3-minute rule. And so here's how it works, guys. And I went through it myself. I was like, hey, I'm Brad Vidic. I got two sisters, whatever, right? About 3 minutes, pass to the next guy. He goes, it's about 9 minutes. I'm like, okay. Next guy, he's about 20 minutes. Next guy, 45 minutes. We're up to 4 a.m. And I was like, what just happened here? And it's like, it was like a group therapy session, because these guys who are, you know, large individuals in the business community just don't have anybody to talk to about this. No one's ever asked them this. There's nowhere for them to have this conversation ever. And so it was like being in a therapy session. And I was like, holy smoke. So now I don't do that anymore. I lead each individual question so I can control it. But that became, you know, we do, and Jess remembers on the one he went to, like, we did all these crazy adventures. And after it, everybody's, you know, high five, it's a great weekend, yada, yada. But if I went and asked everybody who's been on one, I was like, what was the coolest part of it? Every single time they will say, oh, just like talking to the guys, having the conversations. We did one in Big Sky, Montana. And I mean, it was, I put together the most incredible thing. We drove down to Yellowstone and if you ask the guys, what was the best part about that trip? They're like, oh, the drive from Big Sky to Montana, the hour and a half in a car, we had the most amazing conversations. I was like, what? Like, I spent thousands of dollars and pulled so many strings to get us on Moonlight Basin. And they're like, we had an hour and a half drive and we just had the most amazing conversation. And that was the one thing that they remembered. You call some of the guys now, that's exactly what they would say. So I think that process is really important for people.
Yeah, so much. It is interesting. We gather at these conferences and mostly for the people we can meet, except the thing is so overscheduled, we don't get that time to connect to people because the whole time they're talking at us, right? And it's just things are so overscheduled in general when so often human connection is the highest priority. Greg, I kind of want to go back to you one more time. You have been so financially successful describing things clearly and helping make very complex biotech science understandable to people who don't have a PhD. What do you feel like lines up with what Brandon taught us about being clear, being concise, as you helped obviously have multi-billion dollar success stories?
There's a gentleman named Steve Gorlin I worked with, and he was fascinating to see him when he was presenting, because he was constantly scanning the people around the table. And he'd see that Brandt wasn't listening, you know, or it was being a drift. And he'd go, and by the way, and he'd direct it directly at Brandt. And so he'd bring them back into it. So that was an extraordinary talent. And, you know, when you're pitching a company, you know, you have to say this. If you're doing it on a roadshow, you're literally saying the same story six times in a day, and to keep that same energy and verve and stuff like that. So it's amazing to have the ability to put it at whatever level you're talking. If it's PhDs, you go to this level. If it's somebody who's sophisticated as an investor, it's another level. It's an angel investor. It's another, so you've got to be able to graduate and know your audience. Whenever I'm doing a pitch, the first thing I say is, Brandt, Jess, what? Tell me about your backgrounds, you know, and so that you can you can figure out the level in advance. And so many people don't do that. The last thing I think when you're pitching that people do wrong is they tell you why their company's great, you know, and then when they're talking to investors. The real story is, why should you invest in my company? Because I'm going to make you an extraordinary amount of money. Because you don't, you know, I mean, you care that my drug gets to market, but more importantly, you want to know that you made money if you're an investor in that process. So how do I make you money? And I think they do that wrong. So read your audience, know who they are, know their level, and dictate that when you do your presentation. 3 minutes, again, what Brandt said, you know, bang, right off the bat, this is what we're doing. Here's what we're trying to go after. And then the last thing is, you know, if you have passion, and you can do it at whatever level, that's really compelling to the audience. Brandt, Jess, what do you guys think on that?
Yeah.
I mean, for sure. Well, and it's also, you know, it's confidence inducing, which I think in our world today, if I was to say that the biggest change from when I sort of the book sort of hit to today, the biggest change that I get asked, in the beginning, it was all about fundraising. I mean, like, every inquiry was about, I need to raise money. Can you help me with my pitch, right? And then it moved towards, I would say confidence is now probably the number one ask. Is like, can you train me to pitch more confidently? Can you train my sales team to be more confident about stuff, right? And it's a huge push. And the truth is like, and I can't teach you how to be confident. I can, you know, like, that's that's, I can tell you how to do the elements to get there, but like you can't act confident. It doesn't work like that. And I think it's because of the audience, the world that we live in today, people are so jaded and they are so guarded about being sold, about clickbaits and click funnels and overpromising, that we view confidence as something that's put on. It's repelling. And I think that Greg is a perfect example. The way Greg speaks, the way he defines the elements that he's working on is so clear and it is so matter of fact that you can't help but be inspired and understand the level of confidence he has. Because the true definition of confidence, here you go, write this down, team. The true definition of confidence is your belief in the value you bring to others. If I have something that I truly believe is of value to you, I will have confidence in that. If I don't believe it has value, I will have to fake it, right? If I really believe what I'm saying or is valid, it's like you have this confidence. And the number of words you use to explain something is inversely proportional to the confidence you have. It's like the more words you use, the less confident you appear and the less confident you must be. Because you start talking and you start explaining and you start selling. Whereas people who have the utmost confidence in the value do not do that. They're just like, this is the way it is. And I'll give you a funny story. It was a few years ago and one of my celebrity friends who done movies and he has an investor guy that he works with. And he's like, hey, but this is my buddy. He's like a billionaire guy and family in Korea, South Korea. And we got this new business idea and I'm gonna get involved. And we really want you to come in and get involved and do it with us and be part of it. I want to introduce you to him. Oh, great. All right. So we get on the phone with the guy. Their idea, this is April of 2020, is they want to bring masks to Los Angeles and make them in America. South Korea has been using masks for years and years and years. This COVID thing's not going away anytime soon. It's going to be a lot of masks sold. My family has this, you know, manufacturer. We make these amazing nano masks. They're amazing. America's going to love them. Oh, okay. And my plan is I'm going to ship these huge machines to Los Angeles and then we're going to build a factory here and we're going to make a million masks. Oh, okay. So how much money are you looking to raise? Oh, I don't really know. Maybe like 5 million. Maybe, between 5 and 7. Oh, okay. And so what kind of terms are you offering on that? It's like, oh, I don't know. I'll probably do some sort of safe or promissory thing. I'm not 100% sure on that either. Okay. Do you have a deck? Like I could see the outline. Oh, no, I don't have time to put that together. Like, you know, I'm just working it. Well, do you have the masks? Like, no, I mean, I got one that's like, it's in Korean. The packaging's not going to help you, but like, yeah, I got, you know, whatever. And this goes on. And he's basically like, you should come get involved. Put up something easy, couple $100,000. We'll work together, blah, blah, blah. And I tell you, Craig, I could, like, basically, I wanted to run and grab my checkbook. I wanted to give that guy money so fast. Now, I didn't because there's a whole bunch of other things, wife, and I would have had to, you know, she would have killed me in that one. So I didn't. But the moral of the story is the only person in the world that would ever speak to me like that, knowing who I am and what I do, looking for money, is a billionaire who doesn't give a rat's ass if I give him money or not. He couldn't have cared less. And so for whatever reason, it was so inversely inspiring. I was like, I can't believe this guy cares so little about me investing. I have to give him money, right? And so that's an extreme
version. How'd that work out?
But it's a little bit of the same. They made a lot of masks. They made a shit ton of masks. So it would have been great if I was involved in it. But, you know, anyways, I got a few of those stories. But ironically, there's a little bit of that with Greg, right? Like Greg does not tell you stuff that you don't need to hear. If you ask him an opinion on something, you ask him what this is, he will just like ding, 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 you know? And you're just like, oh, damn. Like it's so confidence inspiring because you know he knows what he's talking about. If you ask him about women, he'll yap on forever because he doesn't know anything. You ask him about business.
Good with women.
Right? You ask him about a medical thing. You ask him about a biotech thing. I have sent him so many pitches of med tech companies that brings up, hey, Greg, what do you think about this? He's just like, bing, 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 done. And you know, and that's the most inspiring element, because it's like, this is the guy who knows what he's talking about. He's one of the foremost experts in the world. And the one of the foremost experts in the world does not fill the day with a whole bunch of explanations. Just tells you simply, because if you don't listen to him, that's your problem, right?
You're way too like, kind. This is supposed to be about you.
You know, I've done very well.
Back to you, Jess.
Okay, no, while we're on the topic, I know we talked more about this off camera, but, you know, Greg is the chairman of this amazing, you know, platform company, Juvenescence, that's gotten brought up a couple of times here for preventative medicines, longevity. Talk to me about, like, you don't have to tell the whole story, but, like, talk about that relationship when you're like, he told you what it is, and you run to the car.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, like, if you think about the way people are usually, you know, pitched for investments and whatnot, right? Like, it's a song and dance. It's like, here's the thing. Here's why you should be excited, right? And I see so many of those. I get dozens and dozens of those every week, it seems like. So, and usually there's an underpinning of, I need this from you. And it's just our natural way. Like anything that runs towards you, you want to run away from, right? So when I met Greg the first time and we were talking television stuff and film, nothing to do with investment whatsoever, in any way, shape, or form. And we were talking about how we're building the idea for the show and in the human longevity space. And he was explaining his company and what Juvenescence was going to do and how it was going to come around and plan and who's involved. And just out of filling conversation and backstory. And, you know, when I was asking about the plan, how it would work, and he was talking about that they're going to, you know, they're going to open up for a series of investments. Here's the way that, you know, he's going to end up doing this. They're going to raise some money. And I was like, I'm getting in on this one. Because he never asked me, be like, would you like to invest? When I said like, oh, can I get in on it? He was like, oh, no, not really. And I was like, no. So I went to my car and pulled my checkbook out and literally wrote him a $100,000 check. And I was like, take my money. And I just remember him like, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know where to send it. Like, this is not how this works. Like, and their minimum to invest in a fund of that size was like, not that low. So he was just like, okay. And I just knew that I wanted to be the guy to him that, like, I wasn't asking him for anything. You know what I mean? Like, our relationship was not going to start with me asking Greg for money for something to invest in something. Can we, like, no. It was like, that's a guy who does things successfully. He's got his own money in it. He's taking his own risk.
Big time.
And there's nothing I can do to better sort of, like, qualify it. And so I knew right away, like, this is a guy I want to be involved with. So I was just like, here you go. And he's just like,
very kind.
But I got
you
in.
You did get in.
I got in.
Greg, what do you want to have as a final question? Or what do you want to leave people today with? Or where should we? I mean, obviously, everybody should go to Amazon, get their own copy of 3-Minute Rule. Follow Brant on social media.
So true.
If you're... one of these people that has had the big exits in life, begging him to be allowed to go on his fun adventures. But Greg, where should we leave off today?
What's the raison d'etre now? What's driving you, Brant?
I mean, I am in the relentless pursuit of enjoyment. That is literally my motto. I'm trying to find myself in a position where I'm trying not to be driven by work stuff. I still take on too many clients. Every time I say, and Greg, you probably feel this happens all the time to you as well. It's like, I say, I'm not taking any more new clients on. I'm closed for business unless it's something like really amazing or cool or something I can't say no to. Right? Well, guess what filters through that? Right? Like, now you only get things on your desk that you can't say no to, which is the worst thing that could possibly happen. If I just accepted everything and looked at everything, a lot of those things would just drift through, right? Now it's the only thing that gets to me are these things that are just like, oh my God, like, what am I going to do? Not get involved with this? Like, it's crazy. So that's been very difficult for me to like tone that down. I'm kind of just in the middle of like, I'm super excited about the sort of the people that I'm working with and the companies and the technologies. It's just exciting. And so it's very hard to not tune your radio station into that stuff, and everything is an opportunity. And it's just like, but for me at my age, and Greg, when you get to my age, you'll understand, you know, I'm sort of in the mode where I just want, I want to spend as much of the day, every day, doing stuff that I really want to do and that I enjoy. And more so, I want to enjoy everything I'm doing. The exercise is not about doing things you enjoy. That's easy. You like golfing, you go golfing. But those are fleeting and hard to maintain, right? And you're always looking for the next high. What's the better exercise, and that I struggle with a little bit, is like, I'm trying to find as much joy in all the things that I do, regardless of what that is. So I've been working on what's called created nostalgia, is a concept. My daughter actually helped me come up with it. And created nostalgia is the idea around nostalgia. Nostalgia is a very, very unique emotion that only obviously humans can deal with and understand. And it's the idea of loving and being, I have an affinity for something regardless of the actual quality or element of it. You can be so passionate and nostalgic about a movie you saw when you were a teenager that is a terrible movie, right? Or a restaurant back in your hometown that serves terrible food. Like, you can have these nostalgic feelings for something that has no bearing on whether it's good or not. And what I found was, you can create nostalgic feelings for something that you've never even experienced. Your mind can actually make you feel that way. And so I've been practicing that side of it, where something that I normally don't love, I'm kind of like convincing myself I do. Traveling, airport security. I'm like, I love going to the airport. It's a time, it's orderly. Like, I get myself into this mode where it's making all parts of that day feel more enjoyable. And it's an exercise and it's not easy, but I find that if I predetermined the outcome, I know before I go do this lunch today with a friend of mine, I already know I'm going to have an amazing day. I'm going to love the food. We are going to have the greatest conversation. I'm going to be so happy that I drove down to Century City to have lunch with him. I already know that. I have already been working that in my mind. The odds of me having a terrible time at lunch are very slim. So that's my big thing, created nostalgia.
For me, it's been great. And I think that's a mic drop. Jess, I'm excited, over to you.
Oh, great. You guys, so much fun. I love the Canadian trifecta here, even though we've all left Canada to make our fortunes. But this is so fun. I had no idea that you two knew each other, so it just made it extra fun. And thanks both for making the time.
That you didn't know that. That's amazing.
This is great. Okay, bye, everyone.